to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here we are on the first day of Woodstock, 1969. There we go. It is also Assumption Day. We syncretize. We use all things flowing. It's Greta setting sail on the wind solar ship to America Day. And the guiding astro-mythology meta-story of democratic animism is in full swing. 1969, the first day of Woodstock, was also, I remember, because I spent the summer at Findhorn, and that's when Nixon was impeached. I think, I'm off a year, but never mind, I wanted to weave in Findhorn. And this model of democratic animism, which I think our guest may show up, we'll see, we're fine. So let me lay out the themes. What is it to be human, we might say? It might be the opportunity, Jupiter, and responsibility, Saturn, to borrow qualities of intelligence from our flora, fauna, kin, you know, and to engage in experimental, reciprocal blessing, you know, again, evolutionary, to heal intimacy and uniqueness. So like with our ally, Ron Kauk, our guest who may materialize, there we go, we'll see, we'll be fine, you know, also works with wolves and troubled youth, which we want to play with these many important themes. So it is the full moon. Let me weave our context here. And it's the full moon Leo Aquarius. You know, the sun's image is a bareback rider thrills the excited crowds. Well, it's my Pluto. And it reminds us with its patterning that let all creativity, you know, and performance be magic dedicated to collective well-being. So the sun in Leo with Venus in the underworld, again, brewing medicine on her way to conjoin Mars. Venus and Mars will wed in the underworld of invisibility, you know, in this next week. And we go, right, may it come into accord. You know, and Mars represents our woofiness, our energy, the fuel we run on, metaphorically and literally, and our connection to animals, which is so crucial and so endangered that we must protect it, absolutely, all of our affinities. So with wolves particularly, you know, again, we would be nothing without them. We want to explore the many qualities of this and also engage in reciprocal blessing, absolutely. So as many of us know, if you've been hanging with me for decades, you know, I lived with a hybrid, I don't really like the word hybrid, but part wolf, you know, Moondog, and a half coyote, Stella Coyote, for 19 years with Stella, and between the two of them, decades. I've lived with wolf and coyote more than I've lived with human. It's like our own quirky, you know, it's our own quirky fairy tales going, our assignments. So as we settle in, let me read what I was going to say for guest, who seems to be ghostly in a wolfy, woof-woof, wanna-play kind of way. But it is full moon wolf, a-woo, a-woo radio. And we welcome our evolutionary allies, the wolves, without whom we would be nothing, and with whom we are to mend our treaties. So we're all, there's a confluence now. There's so many guiding patterns. You know, Jupiter, you know, which is our unique journey and our species journey as well, is stationing from inner these last 3 months, to where we've been rummaging through all the different ancestry that swirls in our mythological and physical DNA and all the different chapters of our life, and they're all kind of swirling into that. So I also remember from the early days, I oft tell, but it's an important thing of the Visionary Activist Show hosting Lakota Elder, and it was in the early days of me hosting Stella Coyote, and the Lakota Elder said, nothing smarter in nature, absolutely, and then Coyote, and then this really important part for us to reanimate everything. He said, you know, we Lakota did not hunt alone. Those gifted, and we're going to suggest that these qualities are woofing to us to be experimentally brought alive without presumption, without deriving status, just to try stuff. So those gifted would go into a reverie, Neptune, backstage, and would broker a working alliance with the wolves and coyotes. And, you know, and he said, and we would all hunt together for a season, right? And he said, if you want to destroy a culture, to colonize, you know, and destroy the world, shame people out of what they should be most proud of, the capacity, and now the increasing necessity, to cooperate for collective well-being across species borders, you know, and to all the flora and fauna. So everyone, pragmatic mysticism. And it's one of the things I'm most working on now and wanting to hum, you know, and encourage all of us to counsel, to be a wolf counsel now. Ooh, ooh, ooh. And to go, so all these flotsam and jetsam and sourdough starters. So remember that Edgar Cayce, a true psychic in the 1940s, predicted that the East Coast of America in the 1970s would be deluged by a great flood, and what we got was Watergate, right? So for all of us, I think it's something to brew, to put on the altar of desirable mystery. Might we experimentally, without presumption or hubris, cooperate backstage to negotiate, to and fro democratic animism, that some of the horror of what we humans have irreverently set in motion could be transformed into metaphoric rather than literal. If we do this, then how about this? If we honor water more, then how about this? Can we pull this off? And just as an experiment, the description right now is that the call and response, you know, it's like all of creation's rooting for the stupid rogue humans. Let's make the symbolism really, oh my God, can you believe they said that, us, about Europeans, that vileness is so overconfidently revealing itself and will be its undoing, its self-poisoning, its self-obliteration. You know, anything that is sneakily colonial or condescending or the war on life, all of these things. And that is why we've gathered here at this full moon council, catalyzed by a guest who may or may not show up. Maybe not. I don't feel him. I don't feel him out there. Even though I'm doing a little wolf bow, woof woof, wanna play? I'm not sure. Yeah, well, it's also very witty because we're talking about the restoration of intimacy, and actually this was a challenging guest to get in touch with, only through the grown-up publisher. Anyway, but I'm sure he's a wonderful person in case he shows up. But everything is speaking to us. So back to the Lakota Elder. So part of that dynamic is, let's say, available by affinity to us to experimentally go into reverie, that the description of the moon, you know, the history of creative and ritualistic gatherings right now hums and lives in our mythic DNA. We remember when cultures, you know, would ceremonially invite in the desirable and offer it a template, you know, for real pragmatic, you know, not wuzza-wuzza abstract, for actual beneficial molecular improvement of the environment. So we'd say, well, that would be the part of us, you know, in ancient mythic time, which is pouring into the modern world, you know, where part of us would go off and then come back to the human community, you know, agents of to and fro between what we love and the human community and rotating in that way, and go, all right, it wasn't easy, but we got a deal. The coyotes want the front left leg and half the liver of every other deer, and the wolves are cool with that, and the deer are especially cool with that. That's just fine. Right? Everybody back on stage. So it's time for us to experiment with these many things. We go, let's see, what's the, how quirky. A minor backstage cahooting, technical things are being resolved. Possibly, elves are reporting in, fan mail from Flounder. Oh, no. Wait a minute, sorry. I can do this. Come on, you. Excuse me. This is extremely live radio. I'm trying to convey to one group the phone number for the guest who has been misinformed of the thing. All right, we're just going to have a short... Root for me, team. Root for me. Yes, there we go. All right. All right. I'm back now. All right. So let's think of pragmatic mysticism, which is particularly available. And I think our guest might, you know, again, but it's kind of perfect. Everything right now, you know, is stationing, and it requires kind of, yes, again, inviting in, kerfuffles are inviting in calm deliberation. There we go. Right. But part of the beautiful dynamic right now, you know, is... are forming alliances of reciprocal blessing and mutual evolutionary assist to protect what we love, become like what we love, to protect water, become like water, to protect wolves, become like wolves. So we are soon welcoming Yes, Teo Alfaro. He's wolfing in. He's wolfing in. It's closer. Author of The Wolf Connection and founder of Wolf Connection Sanctuary, wolfconnection.org, and also teoalfaro.com. And what he writes is, Wolf Connection is a unique educational sanctuary and wilderness retreat center that brings people together through direct relationship with rescued wolves for the purpose of empowering the next generation to become authentic leaders and stewards of the earth. With the help of the animals, at-risk groups reconnect with nature. This is such a beautiful thing. Again, like our ally Ron Kauk, again, the positive yang Mars, the green man within us all, regardless of age, race, gender assignment, you know, guiding what was kind of, war veterans and troubled youth, and rock climbing is an aggressive thing, and the myth of the alpha, well, we'll put that into the cauldron, right, back into intimacy, right? The animals help those who are troubled to focus on their impulses, feelings, and emotions in a constructive way. They learn to forgive and give others and themselves a second chance. So Teo writes, an ancient bond for modern times. Oh, good. Excellent. And here he is. And I wanted, by way of introducing Teo, who is here, we've overcome our logistical confusion, because he writes in his book, my body feels electrified during full moons. I can't help it. I've become increasingly aware of this in the past 15 years. Well, Teo, it is a full moon. Welcome.
It is a full moon. Thank you for having me.
That's great. So some trickster is scheduling us, and there I was, you know, weaving a context for you, and but here you are. Excellent.
Yep.
So there's so many places, and there's such a rich content in your journey. And maybe we start with, you know, troubled youth and wolves, although wherever you want to go is fine, but the healing relationship of reweaving ourselves back into nature.
Yeah. And we want to start by even the concept of reconnecting with nature or going back into nature is implies the assumption that nature is outside of us. That is something
right.
out there that we need to reconnect to, or something out there that we need to immerse ourselves in. And the truth is that speaking about this in the book, we carry that nature in our hearts at all times. So the connection many times is not outward, but inward. And what I see at the ranch, this mutual healing relationship that takes place between these at-risk youth and the wolves, it's nothing more than a heart connection that takes place.
Beautiful. You know, and for instance, you mentioned Miko and Nina, this troubled young woman, you know, and there's great photos in your book. Well, I want to get to the gazing and the gaze and, you know, and the many great photos. But Miko and Nina, and maybe you could just animate a little bit that Nina has a difficult journey behind her and is hard to lure out of her cave.
Yeah, I picked that story to open that chapter or open the book with, because it's a story that stayed with me over time. So Nina, you know, no one expected anything from her. That's basically it. You know, she was almost written off, and by her family, by society, co-workers, and ultimately a little bit by the residential treatment home where I met her. Because, you know, as I write in the book, when I arrived, we created the walls to this, it was like a dual diagnosis place, so they treat addiction and mental health and dual purpose. And they immediately tell us, you know, we have this many clients on site right now, but one of them is not going to come out. We know she hasn't left her room, you know, since she arrived 2 weeks ago, and it's nothing that's helping her. And then I ask if I can bring one of the smallest wolves that we had that day. Her name is Ayasha, and she's mixed with coyotes, so that makes her, you know, a little small, a little petite. It's a super sweet animal. So I go in the house with her, and then we go to see Nina. And Nina immediately, you know, lighted up and got excited and said, sure, I come out. So that alone would have been great success. And she came out of the house, walked all the driveway, and stopped right at the edge of the grass and the dirt. You know, and then for your listeners, Nina had a severe agoraphobia, so she would not be in outside spaces. She has huge anxiety socially, and she couldn't step on cracking leaves or any dirt or, you know. So she walked, she got out just in the first 2-3 minutes. And then she listened to the stories of the other wolves, and I could see her getting nervous and then calming down and getting anxious and calming down. And eventually she connected with a much larger female that we had at the time, Miko, who you mentioned. And after a presentation, a short presentation, I said, well, we're going to go for a little hike. There was a trail. This is in the mountains of here outside of L.A. There was a trail behind the home, and she said, I'll come. And no one could believe their ears. And here was Nina. We started hiking. I didn't wait for her. I didn't give her a special treatment. I didn't pamper her. I didn't try to make her feel safe. I just, let's go. And then she started walking behind us. And a mile into the trail, here's Nina next to me, go through dirt and cobwebs and wind and all the things that usually would trigger her, completely grounded, completely, you know, enjoying herself. And the big moment of her experience, of her breakthrough, happens when we stop in a little outlook point and to get some water, and then Nina kneels down to connect with, to offer her hand and try to connect with Miko, and Miko throws herself on Nina, lands on her lap. Nina rolls back in the dirt, so you know, legs up in the air, and with Miko on top of her, licking her face and pawing her in the face, and you know, they're rolling on the ground, and I didn't put this in the book, but you know, the only thing that Nina gets to say, I mean, she's like rolling and crying and laughing and crying. And the only thing she repeats over and over is like, she will say, wait until Dr. Goldman can see that. That was her psychiatrist. That's the only thing she could repeat over and over. Wait until, you know, my psychiatrist can hear about this and see the picture, because he would not believe it.
Or even better, wait until the psychiatrist gets rolled around by the wolves. But there is a distracting hum on your phone that is distracting us from the beauty of your story. So our station is going to hang up and call you back and see if we can get a better line. And meanwhile, we will.
It's a good chance
something.
That you can't. I mean, I'm way up in the mountains, so that might be just the line.
Well, all right. Well, we're going to give it one more try really quickly.
Sure.
All right, team backstage, oh, great, Lucretia and Kasani. Are we going to try for this? There we go. Yes, we are. We're connected. Maybe. I'm sorry, way up in the mountains. Okay. But I can also, you know, weave in here because I lived with a great wolf dog, Moon Dog. May he be honored in perpetuity. There were friends of mine who had adopted a young girl from a Russian orphanage, and she had not been touched in years, and there was no affect at all, just... And we were all going in the car somewhere, and I was moved that Moondog was the first creature she ever hugged and just melted right into him. And the field of animals, when Stella Coyote died, a wonderful Crete ally said to me, you know, the thing you will miss is the energetic field. Animal auras are really like 10, 20 times larger than human auras, and the missing of that. And I think it's the missing of that kinship, you know, that is, you know, part of our yearning and part of the work of the likes of, well, all of our hearts and of Teo's, you know, wolf healing sanctuary, where he rescues, you know, hybrid wolves who have been treated badly. And there we go. We are reconnecting. It could be possible. There we go. But there's lots to play with. And I want to, particularly also when Teo comes back, to honor the gaze. You know, we would be nothing without wolves. And I learned so much living with Moondog and other people's opinions and, you know, and knowledge. And Michael Fox, head of the Humane Society, told me a lot, some of which was true. But apparently, you know, wolves taught humans silent hunting. Right? Because wolves and humans, maybe this is true, you know, but one thought is wolves and humans are the only mammals in our world that do the gaze. The leader will look at, say, elk, look back at the pack, look back at the elk, and the pack will follow their leader for the moment's gaze, right? And apparently, you know, well, apparently humans before that were like going, oh, there's some elk, right? But silent hunting, right? And they go, so humans also do that, which is gaze, back, gaze. And that's, you know, part of the dynamic that we're animating the beautiful woofy story available to us that, you know, right now the guiding meta story is what's available, not what's going to happen, but what's available for us to dance with. You know, the moon quintiles Jupiter, irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love is available. Raise your hand if you'd like such a thing. But it's also the capacity to open portals between worlds, between all of the journeys of our lives and the journey of our ancestors all swirling within us in these complex mix, you know, eager to pour into our current incarnational realm. And so we go, oh, but it's also the quintile. All right, Teo's trying his cell phone. There, we're working on these things. It's good. We're all Wolfie and Coyote, and we want to get to, yes, note to self, we want to get to the Wolfote, the wolf-coyote hybrid, which Teo writes about and which I am enthused about in so many ways, having lived with both of those people. But the nature of the quintile is that it's a capacity for us to hold a true perception, you know, a true perception of kinship or something we love, and to be like a tuning fork, meaning it hums in others. So we don't have to strident, we don't have to convince, which means to conquer, we don't have to polarity, which only feeds the dementors. We want to hold the perception and go, oh, and it's the gaze quality again. You know, since you guided me to look that way, I see that now. So it's a long-lasting influence. So again, we're playing with these wonderful things, but the gaze, and when Teo returns, there's some part of his book, I rummaged for it, I couldn't find it again, but about that quality of gaze, and there's a physiological quality to the wolf eye, which makes it the capacity to hold a gaze for the longest time of any species. I'm not sure, I'm going to need Teo back to make sure I got that one right, but in keeping with that, There are great gazes going on in the world right now. Many of you may have seen the photograph of the gaze of Greta, you know, our young 16-year-old teammate, part of our collective dream, gazing reciprocally into Jane Goodall's eyes. And it's such a powerful knowing, the gaze. And again, this quality of gazing, you know, in Kruger National Park or in wildlife places, the gaze, you know, we are, as humans, hungry for this gaze, the gaze of the jackal, the gaze, you know, reciprocal back and forth, kinship. You know, we can starve, you know, the more reduced it is, the more, you know, the more we can kill or allow the outsourced Saturn to, you know, say yes, you know, fossil fuels, you can kill all of life and the war on life. There's all of that. Ah, Teo's back. That's good. You're back and possibly even stronger in voice. How are you?
Yeah, it seems that way. How is this?
Well, we'll work with it. What the hell? But so what I wanted to toss to you was there's a great part of your book and I couldn't re-find it, even though I've scribbled things everywhere. It was on the gaze. And I've known this about wolves and humans and silent hunting and all, but you did a great thing about talking about the physiology of the eye of gazing. Do you remember this part?
I'm a few aspects, a few things that we can say about that. You know, some researchers now believe that one of the adaptations that we went through in order to collaborate with wolves was our eyes got smaller. Our pupil got smaller, so you can see the white part. And wolves and humans, we are the two. We are the only two species of, that you can see the white part, and you have a very vivid eye movement language. So some biologists theorized that was a way in which we began communicating with wolves at one point, just with eye movement. And, you know, so that's one thing that we can talk about the eyes. Then on a more spiritual level, you know, the it's been said that the eyes is the gateway to the soul. And certainly wolves have a way to ignite that connection in us. So is that what you're referring to?
Well, yeah, and also you referenced that there's a physiology to the eye, which again I was trying to follow of some kind. Yeah, you just mentioned that, and I'm going to re-listen to what you just said because it's like, oh, this is important. I can't. So the gaze, and then you know while you were gone and came back, and we keep playing with this, but I also wanted to reference. There's a great photograph in your book, The Wolf Connection, on page 71, of Miko and Tom. And I liken it to, you know, these gazes that are so, to be truly seen. You know, I likened it to Greta, the young climate activist, and Jane Goodall looking deeply into their eyes. And the photo that you have of Miko and Tom, you can see it's a magic photo because you can see things happening because as you narrate, you know, Tom was sort of this cool, tough veneer. That was his camouflage. Yep. And you can see this wolf looking in going, I see you. And you can look, whoever photographed that, it's right at the moment of Tom's cool act melting because he's seen. It's really good.
That was a master shot. And we've been, that really expresses the depth of the program. At the moment of Tom's reflection, looking down, Miko is coming over his shoulder to connect with him, basically to provide comfort. And that's, you know, there's so much said. We can talk about, you know, for an hour on that photo alone, because that photo is really tapping into an ancestral connection, a bonding that we had, with wolves for perhaps hundreds of thousands of years. And for both of us, we are pack animals, you know, the wolves and us. And, you know, so many studies have been done about, you know, the implications of being disconnected. I mean, youths that are being abandoned that don't have that connection with the parents and that healthy, that really creates all kinds of psychological and emotional issues. And here is this wolf healing the young man.
Right, because you also, you know, mentioned there's a good deal of history that we want to allude to, and also great, you know, wolves in the Huichol tradition, wolves in the indigenous different many traditions that we want to bring up. That's really useful and great. But you say that, yeah, the history to the Pleistocene era, 500,000 years ago, we have evidence that humans and wolves are living in proximity, at least. And you say there's a, you know, in the caves, there's a wolf skull at the entrance as an ornament or a symbol, we don't know, but there's that. And then you go into, there's a wolf for every North American ecosystem, ecotype, that we want all of this. And then we want to tease, we're going to have a very short break in a moment, but hang in there, Teo, and the sound qualities, we're praying for it to improve. We're doing good enough, we're wolfy. So the wolf-human transformation story is much we really want to get to, and how crucial this is now, right, with the war on life and the rampant cruelty and destruction, of so much. And you write about this on your website, wolfconnection.org, and also in your book. And it's a call, right, that the connection that we want to enter into a partnership of protection, reciprocal blessing, yeah. Right?
It's really reclaim the partnership that we already had. And that goes way beyond protection. It really touches on kinship.
Yes. So we're going to take a very short break, our usual fantastic Taj Mahal music, and we will be right back after this very short break with Teo Alfaro. Well, that was not our usual Taj Mahal, because this is a day in which we are invoking our wolfy playfulness to dance with kerfuffles. There we go. That's what we're doing. So welcome back, teammate, allies. This is the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our perfect for now guest is Teo Alfaro. He's author of The Wolf Connection, founder of Wolf Connection Sanctuary. You know, and he writes many beautiful, important things. You know, again, The Wolf Connection is a unique educational sanctuary and wilderness retreat that brings people together for direct relationship, intimacy with rescued wolves or rescued hybrid wolf dogs for the purpose of, yes, leadership. Let's dive back in there. His website is wolfconnection.org. So, yeah, when I lived with, you know, part wolf and half coyote for decades, longer than I've lived with humans, as I told our team. So I liked at the time that my friend Michael Fox, head of the Humane Society, said, you know, wolves don't operate on dominance, they operate on charisma. And in wolf culture, charisma means who initiates play best. Not just play, let's go hunting, but play is very up there. And he said, you know, you can, you know, it's the wolf pups with the lowest resting heartbeat are very often those who assume leadership. And I'm going to toss it to you in a second. And because I've always thought, you know, we're now at this critical time, all of us, let's define what desirable leadership is. And if we go, it's the calmest, coolest wolf who invites the playful ingenuity of the pack, and we go, I'd vote for that. Does that resonate with yourself, Teo?
Sure. I love the charisma. I never thought of that. That's a good way to look at it. I mean, for me, leadership is, for what we see at the wolves, leadership is presence. There's a particular way in which an alpha carries themselves that is not bullying, is not over-dominant, is not aggressive, and it is not challenged by anybody, and they it communicates the sense of safety or direction or container that the pack needs in order to operate healthy, in a healthy way.
Right. And then also, I think, you know, where we want to tease all of this into pertinence for now. So we like wolf model leadership, the playful, and may we all move our emotional default setting to wolf, wolf, want to play, that kind of part of that dynamic. And then I love, you know, and you write a great deal about this in your book, The Wolf Connection, about the hybridization of wolves and coyotes, right? Some people call them coy wolves. We call them wolfotes. But I, again, let me toss it to you because I think of, you know, in the astro mythology, you know, wolves as very Saturn. It's a disciplined pack. Everybody's got a task and a job. There is play, but everybody's got a task and a job, very Saturn. Coyotes, not so much. Very Uranus, mad trickster, genius. And so I'm thinking that the evolutionary assist, because we, you know, we're in such critical times that we all have to evolve everything. The evolutionary advantage of a wolfote would be to have the support of a pack structure, and it's kind of what this full moon's about, you know, that encourages the mad, unique coyote, wild genius within the pack. I mean, does that amuse you, or in line with what you've observed from the wolf coyote hybrids?
Yes, I mean, we only have a few of them at the ranch, so our observations are limited. But it seems to be, you know, there's a study of some coy wolves in the Midwest where, you know, typically the wolves have occupied the northern states and the coyote the southern states, and then the wolves have been hunted in the northern states almost to extinction, so the coyotes moved up. Geographically speaking, move north, and then wolves are reintroduced, so now coyotes and wolves are sharing some territory that they did not share before, and they began breeding. So you see these coy wolves now in the wild, and so this study, particularly in Illinois, points to the fact that the wolves were being hunted and now they're breeding with coyotes. And then, so they have, these packs have the strength of the wolves with the cunning of the coyote and the lack of fear of humans. So this actually packs are traveling using the train tracks around Chicago, believe it or not. Yeah. And they're scavenging and you know, human food and so on. And so they, in order to eradicate them, they declare like an open season on them. So, and what they found is that the more they hunted them, the more they reproduced. So in order to control the population, they had to stop hunting them. So what an incredible adaptation to hunting. You know, I mean, the human is the source of the biodiversity loss. And now we have a species that is evolving to be almost hunting proof. So I find that fascinating.
Yes, no, absolutely. And again, you know, what do we want to tease? Because one of the things when we were still searching for you at the beginning of the hour, you know, I said, well, we want to ask some basic things like what is unique to humans? What is unique to humans aside from our rudeness? You know, and we go, it might be our opportunity and responsibility to borrow qualities of intelligence from our flora fauna, from our plant and animal allies, which is really the core of your dedication, right? To have this exchange of, you know, that which has been treated with lack of respect in the dog wolf world and the humans as well, healing their connection, right? So borrowing the qualities of intelligence, and then there's a whole lot of great things you write about the wolf human transformation stories and the long alliances and everything. So I know your whole book is about this, but if there's something that comes up in which you go, what is the quality of wolf intelligence that we humans might most want to consider now?
The main one is that the wolves lead with the heart. They have this heart connection that is that starts, that begin their relationship. So humans, we have that quality as well, but you know, I explain this process in chapter 6 of the book. I mean, how we disconnected from you know, we have two intelligences. We have the brain, the mind, and then we have the heart. And the heart has is naturally, you know, silent, naturally creative, inclusive, collaborative, adventurous, innovative, on and on. Clear, so, and then the mind is an excellent tool for communication and for to convey the direction of the heart, but it's not a tool to it's not designed to lead. It's not designed to pick a path, and that's the distinction we lost. So now we have the good assistant, the mind, leading, and the leader, the heart, quiet. That we can learn from the world.
Yeah. And this is a full moon of heart. It's the sun in Leo, which is heart, opposite moon in Aquarius, to contribute to the community. And I love some previous guests to yourself, Rick Steiner and David Grimes, you know, who Alaska Wilderness Guides and Scouting Reports allies and great lovers of wolves. And they just had this great moment where they were in their camp. It was morning. They were just finishing breakfast. And a pack of wolves came and sat in a circle with them. They were making music. They were playing guitar and singing. And the wolves came, and he said, and even the little pups with their little baby, he said it was great. And they all kind of jammed for a while, and then they looked at the lead wolf, and they got up and went silently into the. And it's like, that's just the best. That's just the best. Leading with heart and heart and music, you know, and measuring what you're saying, measuring like these are good non These are not threatening humans. These are good humans playing music at ritual. Yep. Now we're getting to a whole part of your book, which is Animals and Ritual and Theater, that is also very dear to my heart. But I love the wolf, the entire wolf pack came and jammed with Rick Steiner and David Grimes. And they really got into it, you know, with the wolves and the guitar and the banging on pots and things. And we go, more of this, more of this. But yeah, you write about, I'm sorry, say what?
I said, that's beautiful. Yeah, incredible experience.
Yeah, and you write about animals and ritual, and I've seen that. I mean, again, animals so dear to me from the whole journey, because also something that Michael Fox said also is he said, and wolves have theater. The playful lead wolf. I think the term alpha is going out of favor these days. Will carry a bone into the circle of wolves to symbolize, I bring food. You know, it's like, that's fabulous. And just as a little footnote, and then I'll toss it back to you for animals and ritual, because they do. You know, we see the prairie dogs worshiping the sun, you know. And when I lived in a cuckoo place way out in the wilds in Southern California, I noticed that my very spooky Abyssinian cat would leave before dawn and go someplace. And one day I followed it, and it stood on this rock. And when the sun rose, the rock was the first thing that the sun hit, and I go, oh, Cathenge. It's Cathenge. Anyway, but it was so wonderful, and I was honored that I could accompany the cat on that. So yeah, so that's why it's a hard thing, isn't it? Now, you know, you can jump in on it. You know, what is it that is unique to our species? Again, maybe our capacity to borrow qualities of intelligence. But we have, you know, animals have theater and ritual and art. Coyotes have fantastic art, as destructive as they are. I've seen incredible works of art and practical structure, you know, because, well, with yourself, you know, you're given a backstage access. Granted, the wolf dogs that are rescues, and I think we all thank you. There's no more wonderful action than supportively embracing those animals and people and children, you know, who have been having a hard time. So you rescue these wolf dogs from a lot of it. It's from you know, breeding farms, right?
I rescued these animals all across the country from, they all come from different breeders, and then many of them have been bought as pets, in many cases illegally, and then they get confiscated by authorities, they get given up, abandoned, neglected, mistreated, you name it. And some animals I have come from fur farms where they've been, bred for and raised for the pelts. So, and that's important to clear because many people think sometimes that I go into the wild with a cage and then with a trap and I trap these wolves and bring them here for therapeutic purposes,
no.
And that's not the case, right?
No, wait. Yeah.
And you mentioned you mentioned something. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. We've got a slight delay. Don't mean to step on your words, but I think part of your beautiful dedication to embrace and heal and honor. Because I love the photos. Well, it's on your website, wolfconnection.org. When you go meet the pack, and part of me at first thought, oh, it's going to be the human team. Oh no, how wonderful! It's the wolves. And you have the pictures of the wolves and their story, right? And we love that. We love seeing the wolf pack, which is big. I mean, how many wolf dogs are living at your sanctuary?
I have 35 currently.
Wow. Okay. And they're all pretty happy.
They're all very happy.
Oh, that's great. Well, because I think part of it is, the creatures, the hybrid wolf and the half coyote came to me and it was irresistible. But it's not for the faint-hearted, right? And a lot of people, you know, Stella Coyote, who was a half-coyote, half-dog, had siblings that other people thought, oh, that'd be cool, right? And tried to adopt, but couldn't, just too wild, right? It's like what you describe with your first wolf pup eating everything. And people weren't up for that. And hence, what's happened is they think it's cool or offers status, and then when it gets real, not really up for the pretty kind of full-time evolutionary to and fro wheeling and dealing that's required, and they give them away or drop them or abandon them or whatever, and that's where you come in to re-honor them, yeah?
Sure. And that's how humans do relationships. I mean, it's not only with our pets and the animals in our homes. I mean, we get into all kinds of relationships for the wrong reasons, you know, for coolness, for loneliness, for you name it. And then voila, you find yourself dealing with another human, another animal, another tree, another living being. And of course, that other living being will have its own ideas of the relationship. And then we want to bail out. So that's one of the, you know, shadow sides of being human. You're talking about what makes humans special. And I think unique. There are many things that make us unique, right? I mean, this is a species that over the millennia we could teleport, shapeshift, connect with universal truth, have all kinds of skills and talents. Shapeshifting has been recorded in many traditions and still exists. And then of course, we settle for the limited life that we have created for ourselves. And then we look into, more biblical sense of the uniqueness of humans, being a steward of the earth and the way it's been interpreted by most of us, by most humans, is in an adolescent way. So basically, I'm a steward. I take whatever I want. I use and abuse without consequence, right? We haven't reached yet the maturity to truly be stewards and then have a sense of loyalty and responsibility and honoring of all the living beings of the earth. But, I live my life with the hope that we will get there before it's too late. So that's why I create World Connection and I dedicate every breath I take to that hope.
Yes. No, that it's the only way to go. Right, I mean, it's like, and that's why we add a little bit of coyote to the thing, because coyote represents, in us and in itself, that which likes against all odds. It's like against all odds, perfect. Let's watch this, and I love the, again, often told that it's in our magic backpack of favorite things that we have, but I love cameras catching coyotes watching humans laying traps, and then the humans, these are just still camera video in the woods, and then the humans move on, and the coyotes dig up the traps, set them with a stick, right? Set them off with a stick to protect the community, and then just for attitudinal flourish, pee all over them. And I go, that's great. That's what we want to do. We want to watch the traps, dig them up, liberate others in the neighborhood. Don't fall for this. Don't be hurt by this. And then pee all over it. I think it's really great. So I think that kind of plucky, we can do it with the confident organizational heart, of the wolf. And just in our dance, the astro mythology of our convening, as what was rising when we convened is 23 Scorpio. It's got a metaphor, a man or woman delivering a sermon on a mount. And I go, yes, we have. Teo has many things to say. And another ally in our show, Neil Douglas Klotz, Aramaic scholar, says, what comes to us is blessed are the meek. In Aramaic is more, blessed are those who soften emotional rigidity within their hearts, for they shall have all the power of nature. And it's like, oh, you can really work with that. Yeah. Well, and that's your heart-nature connection, that all creativity and performance be dedicated to the earth. Yeah. Right, but we started off with, when you rightly said, to reconnect with nature. No, we are nature. What? So, but how do you voice that? How do you express that? Because that's, of course, what you said is true. Do we are here. How do we address our exile in return?
That question leads directly into spiritual practice, and sure, leads directly into being able to be in the modern world, in the world of constant stimulus and constant input, and never having enough time in to do what you need to do. Living in there without being carried away by it. So with enough practice and enough you know, perhaps meditation or you know, other ways, other forms of inner work, there is a way to create that witnessing, you know, or separation between the world that we live in and you know, being unleashed in the wind, like my teacher would say, you know, opposed to experiencing the wind and still having a direction. So I'm talking in abstract here, but at the end of the day, it's about you know, slowing down. I'm not saying anything new, and being able to, of course, you know, going to nature and spending time next to a creek or a lake or a mountain, forest can always help with that. But ultimately, the ability to inhale all that consciousness, keep it in the body, and then take it with you when you go back to your life. Otherwise, it's just, you know.
But I think we're at another kind of... I think we're in another round of the spiral on that one, which is, yes, go spend time. You said in nature, ha, 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 and we're not, well, anyway. But yes, go spend time in nature. What is the language? But I think at this point, we're being encouraged to experimentally wheel and deal, like you're doing with the wolves, going, all right, you know, I give up this, I give you this, you give this back. What do we want to spiral into the world? And for people to experimentally really form alliances, like what you're living and encouraging of, you know, reciprocal blessing, you know, if you do this, I'll do this. You know, I mean, I lived with the coyote, right? And coyotes know no shame. We've trained dogs to know shame. Wolves sometimes can feel shame because they're such group social beings. Coyotes, no shame, right? But all wheel and deal, like, what are you offering? What are you doing? And I think that's kind of part of what we want to bring into play, you know, of pragmatic mysticism, that we feel a connection. We go, hi, okay, if my dedication magnetizes opportunity to protect you, you know, I will do that, you know, and in return, well, let me also run this by you too. Qualities that we admire, and you know, the more language we have, the more animal friends we have, the more ways of participating and creating the world we have. And so a friend was recently mentioning the word deliberate. I go, oh, that's a really good word for now, because it means intentional and calm. And I think of this as kind of wolfy, but it's like when you're dizzy or when you're, it means, you know, from balance, Libra. So deliberate meaning slowed down, like what you were talking about, time, you know, and deliberate, you know. So does deliberate, I mean, do you think of the wolves that you know, and like if a wolf is stalking something, it's very deliberate, right?
Well, they're deliberate in every action they take. And, yeah, you know, they have a masterful use of their energy and resources. So everything they, I mean, I don't have any experience of wolves idling or doing things just because. So there is a deliberate intention behind the hunt, the rest, the sleep, the play, the intercourse, you name it. I mean, it's almost defines them. And back to the heart conversation, the heart is deliberate. The heart is intentional. The heart is has a peaceful, warrior-like sense of being and approach to life.
So, is part of your education the people who come, and so you've got troubled youth being healed. There's those programs. You take people, you know, kind of upscale Southern California people. I'm thinking I'm on wolf pack walks and stuff. So, do you think that like the wolves are opening avenues or channels of influence? You know, that there's a magic underneath everything, right? Going, all right, and we need to speak with wealthy people too, as well as troubled people. Is that part of the dynamic of what's going on?
Yes, that's the message I'm getting, is that you know, every human being walking this earth is at risk of not living a full life. It's at risk of getting distracted and just have nothing to show for on their deathbed. So I serve whoever's in front of me. And of course, we cater to the at-risk populations that, you know, we try to to, you know, raise the social bottom line and reclaim and recover those that have been left behind. So we serve, you know, youth in, you know, kids in foster care. We serve gang members, incarcerated people, people in addiction programs, you know, veterans. We offer some programs for Fortune 500 companies that come and do leadership and team building activities. And we, you know, we blast them with the wolf message. So then, you know, hopefully they can take some of that wolf message into their corporations and create cultural change that will trickle down into society and so on. We do also, obviously, we are a nonprofit organization, so we do fundraising events and just donor cultivation events with, you know, affluent and wealthy communities. But really, the message to the affluent communities is exactly the same. I say the same to them that what I say to a kid in foster care that has nothing. And because ultimately it's speaking of the heart. And some of these people that I consider, you know, privileged don't have any of it.
Right. So we're on our way out all too soon. Is there a blessing you would like to receive from our audio wolf council? Oh, we're off. We're out pretty fast. Okay. But and then a blessing we'd like to spiral forth. Might you wish in your heart that we all become protectors of what we love, or anything you want to say in these next 20 seconds?
That's very interesting.
Oh, well, there we have it. May it be a vast mystery, because we're on our way out. But thank you very much for being a playful wolf through our logistical kerfuffles to honor the great work that you're doing. Thank you so much, Teo Alfaro.
Thank you.
And thanks to our new board op, our new ancient board op, Lucretia Burton and also Kasani, our intern board op, who has great plans. This is so exciting. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. Thank you so much.